You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. If you're a Telstra shareholder, you must seriously be wondering about the wisdom of your investment in what used to be the most highly regarded and respected Australian-owned and operated telco. Since the demise of Ziggy and the appointment of Sol and his three amigos, the company's reputation in the eyes of most Australians has been somewhat tarnished. The ongoing stoush with the Australian government over fibre to the node, along with pricing issues with the ACCC, and now the threat by Telstra's public affairs boss and bull terrier, Phil Burgess, you remember him, he was the one who wouldn't sell Telstra shares to his mother, to invest the $4 billion allocated to fibre to the node into something else, and probably overseas, really makes you wonder where their loyalties lie. Most other IT companies invest unconditionally for the future, earning the reputation of being innovators and leaders in their field. With success comes respect and loyalty with both consumers and manufacturers. Take Apple for example. Like them or loathe them, Apple has a league of devout followers who, for whatever reason, worship the technology that Steve Jobs and his colleagues dish up. Apple may have their run-ins with government and business from time to time, but it doesn't stall the process of development and rollout of new technology. This, unfortunately, is not the same for Telstra. Dr. Phil Burgess addressed a Rotary Club launch in Melbourne this week, and the mudslinging he's renowned for was flying thick and fast. The headline in the Australian newspaper made me laugh. Terror threat if Telstra loses. I just had to read on. This time, Phil was ramping up the fear factor about the strategic role Telstra plays when providing services to ASIO in the form of phone intercepts. He said, that is something that has to be an intimate relationship between the judicial authorities and security authorities and the telecommunications company. You want the government of Singapore to be at the table on that? He went on to say he didn't know any country in the world and he didn't know any press in the world that would stand by with their hands in their pockets and watch critical infrastructure be turned over to a foreign government. Not bad for a PR boss whose company is about to sue the federal government for missing out on winning a tender for broadband in the bush. Maybe Phil's dealing with the wrong department and Senator Coonan could introduce Dr. Phil Burgess to Kevin Andrews, the Minister for Immigration and Citizenship. After all, Kevin Andrews takes a great deal of interest in foreign doctors who deal in SIM cards. Maybe Phil could spend some time at Hotel Villawood and then be deported as a threat to national security. Now there's a thought, two birds with the one stone. Shareholders, rejoice.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron takes a look at Australia's first synchrotron. Elton John blasts the internet. New online ad systems threaten privacy. Digital online delivery takes the lead in the format race. And iTunes reaches a new milestone. All that and more on Australia's premier Tech Talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra sues Coonan over funding to competitors, the New South Wales Supreme Court says an eBay sale is legally binding, Sony hints at digital TV tuner plug-in for PlayStation 3, Pioneer feels the pressure as plasma profits slump, and Korean War highlights are now available for mobile download. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra commenced legal proceedings in the federal court against Communications Minister Helen Coonan on Friday last week. This latest spat between the incumbent telco and the government's communications senator is over her decision to increase funding for the Broadband Connect Infrastructure Fund to the Singtel Optus and Elders Consortium from the original $600 million to almost $1 billion. Telstra is alleging that the process by which the funding was increased and awarded to Opel was not fair and equitable, despite an independent inquiry by the Australian National Audit Office already finding no impropriety in the process. According to Telstra, the Broadband Connect program guidelines offered up to $600 million of taxpayers' money to provide broadband to underserved rural and regional areas. Telstra submitted its proposal on that basis. When government funding was awarded to Opel, Telstra says it asked the minister to explain why it was not given an opportunity to submit a revised proposal, and claims that the minister has allegedly refused to provide an answer and refused to provide relevant documentation detailing the ultimate award of Broadband Connect funding. The incumbent, in a statement, said, "Telstra has been left with no alternative but to seek orders from the federal court compelling the communications minister to provide documents relating to how the decision was made." A judge in the New South Wales Supreme Court last week ruled that a sale on eBay is legally binding in the real world after a defendant failed to hand over a vintage aeroplane he sold on the online auction site. The defendant, Vin Thomas, changed his mind after listing a 1946 World War II Wirraway plane for sale on eBay. Thomas reportedly got a better offer for the aircraft offline and failed to provide it to the winning bidder. The judge agreed with the winning bidder, Mr. Peter Smythe, and ordered that Thomas hand over the plane for the agreed eBay auction amount. The judgment sets a precedent for future cases and means eBay sales could now be legally binding. Before the ruling was handed down, eBay spokesman Daniel Filer was adamant that any decision would have no impact on public confidence in the auction site. Filer added that eBay sellers had the option to reject any bids before an auction closed and encouraged both buyers and sellers to examine feedback history before proceeding with a transaction. While Sony continues to enjoy success with its PlayStation 3, the head of marketing at Sony Computer Entertainment New Zealand last week hinted at a digital TV tuner also being on the cards for the popular games console. Warwick Light, head of marketing at SCE New Zealand, said, "We're hoping next year, about the same time that Freeview launches its terrestrial broadcasting service, to release a digital tuner for the PS3, turning it into a programmable TV recorder." Freeview currently operates a satellite service and is expected to commence terrestrial transmissions using DVB-T in early 2008. Although no indication was given that Sony plans to introduce the tuner in other markets, the DVB-T standard is also used in Europe and Australia. The move is expected to cement the PS3's place in the digital living room, particularly as it already ships standard with an integrated Blu-ray disc player. Despite selling out of plasma stock in Australia, Pioneer last week reported a 14% drop in plasma TV sales and losses of $50 million for the last quarter. Smart House News reported that Pioneer Electronics released lower sales figures and announced a double-digit drop in operating income due to lower profitability in home electronics and weaker exchange rates during its fiscal first quarter, which ended on June 30. Tony Trent from Pioneer Electronics spoke with Tech Talk Radio last year and explained that the company was the first to manufacture high-definition plasma televisions and decided to specialise in plasma over LCD and other television technologies.
We think it's got some inherent advantages for the home over LCD, so it's closer. It's a phosphor-based screen, so we feel that we can get better brightness, better levels of contrast than you can off an LCD, and approximate closer to what people expect from normal CRT televisions.
Despite Pioneer's optimism, consolidated operating revenue was now down 4.7% from the previous year's first quarter, with drops in plasma displays being blamed, along with weaker international currencies. And The Age Tech last week reported that Chinese mobile phone users can now download film clips of the Korean War and stirring military anthems to celebrate the founding of the People's Liberation Army. Subscribers to China Unicom, the smaller of the country's two mobile telecom operators, are being offered the service for about $1 a month, according to the official Xinhua news agency. Customers will also be able to get military news sent straight to their handsets from the Army's very own newspaper. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Tonight we're talking mobiles.
Now, I guess in my industry, everyone just uses it. It's a work tool sort of thing, so they don't have time. I mean, you know, they don't want to be near their phone when they go home sort of thing.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
I can only see SMS getting stronger.
Eventually it'll head that way, but at the moment the SMS has got the it's always on type of thing. If the phone's on, you can always get your SMS through.
One of the obvious differences between XP and moving up to Vista is the new Aero Glass interface.
It sounds like me on steroids.
Ah, good work, that man. Well done.
I've got a gripe here. Next G, not so good for the bush.
New Nokia is not the best handset for rural users in marginal coverage.
Did it have
areas.
A blue tick? Because this is where Telstra have...
Tell us about the blue tick. I don't know about this.
I love out-of-context promos, don't we? Spam's one of those things. Like, I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though, but nonetheless.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And a very big hello to everybody listening to us, wherever you might happen to be around this wonderful big country of ours. Welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. And boy, what a week it's been. Senator Coonan's out. Politics is thick and fast. Technology's happening at a ferocious rate. And three people sitting around this panel have no doubt been spending a lot of time wilfing. Dr. Ron, you're one of the best wilfers around, from what I can gather. How's your wilfing week been?
It has been a week of wilfing. You're right. What a lot of news and interesting stuff in the technology world.
It has been an incredible week. The reason why I say wilfing, which is what was I looking for
Indeed.
On the internet.
That's it.
I've been doing a bit of research on these iPhone things because there's been a fair bit of chat in and amongst the Tech Talk Radio people of recent times about that, which we'll talk about very shortly. But I went to the Apple site and I wilfed. I went to the iTunes movie, what do you call them, trailer downloads.
Ah, yes.
Have you been there of recent time?
Not of recent times.
They've got some, they've gone high def in the Apple movie trailer, so I thought, I'll just give this a whirl.
They still give you the option of the three different formats, so you can...
Six different formats. Yeah, so you go all the way up to 1080p, P for progressive.
I'll have to go and check it out.
I downloaded a few of them. If you've got a PC which is sort of relatively well connected to a sound system, they're pretty darn good to have a bit of a look at, so... Downloaded the Harry Potter trailer, which you got an email about, and a few other movies that were there. But you got to be careful because these are big files, guys. They're over 100 meg for a movie trailer. Now, you need to be ADSL 2 equipped, I would be saying, or else, if not, Flatnacker ADSL 1. But well worth the wilf. Speaking of wilfing, Graham, how's your week been?
It's been very good, Andrew.
You've been wilfing on any sites? Go to a site and you get distracted and then you come back half an hour later feeling
that
you've lost...
Oh, that happens all the time. Yeah.
Especially really when you're looking for stories for this show, I find.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I noticed you have been wilfing because you sent us something through about printers.
That's right. Yeah.
We're going to talk about that later on the show, too.
I was following links all around the world about, printers can... Be as bad as smoking, apparently, for your health.
Really? Well, we'll talk about that. This is the obviously the carbon stuff, laser printers, wasn't it?
Yeah, little fine particles that come out of your laser printer. Yeah, so yeah, we'll be talking about that later on.
Very good. All right. All that and more on Tech Talk Radio. I had blue screen of death on my Windows XP box this week.
On your XP machine?
Yes.
What did you do to it?
I did nothing to it.
What did you do to provoke that?
Did you take a photo of it with your camera phone?
I've got it here. Well, actually, the result of the photograph.
And you make it your wallpaper on your telephone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, you probably never had a blue screen of death, or very seldomly do you get a blue screen of death on a Windows XP box. But no, I managed to get it this time. Now, when the machine rebooted and came back up sort of feeling sorry for itself, it said...
Windows has recovered from a serious error.
That's the one. Serious, you're not kidding. You're just blue screen. I lost my work. You're such and such. I sweared and cursed. And
except Word's pretty good at doing the document recovery thing now.
I wasn't in Word. I was in an audio process recording voices and stuff, and they don't recover
quite so well, no.
I was doing this show, and it just went kaput. But anyway, I pushed the little button that said, would you like to report this process to Microsoft?
And you clicked send.
I said, yeah, why not? You may as well learn of my grief here. Anyway, a few moments later, I had a little pop-up come back up on my screen in the form of a web browser, and it said, the problem was caused by your NVIDIA graphics driver.
Well, there you go.
The program was created by NVIDIA Corporation, and NVIDIA Corporation does not currently have a solution from the problem that you reported.
Oh, Okay.
Recommendations? Change graphics card.
Yeah.
The million-dollar question, though, do you have an NVIDIA graphics card in that machine?
Yeah, I do, actually. Adam speaks highly of them in the media centres, too.
Yes, he does. Don't mention the war.
No. Let's talk about iPhone, shall we? There's been a bit of discussion of late about iPhones, so much so that I've been talking emails with people like Adam and others around the place, and we'll clear up a few interesting things as well. I've put some new reading material, some homework from everybody up on the website. Let's talk about what currently happens in mobile phone land out there, whether you're with any particular carrier. We can talk about the technology. There's three layers at the moment. There's CDMA, there's GSM, and there's 3GSM, which is a similar flavor, different animal, but nonetheless, it's GSM technology. If you have a look at the Tech Talk Radio website, the top right-hand corner, there is a little link there that says, check out 3G rollout in Australia, and you'll see on your screen what we're looking at here on our screen. And this little graph puts everything into perspective, I believe. Now, we're currently in Australia, we've moved into the world of 3G. That's the big buzzword, the third generation mobile technology. Now, this runs on the 3GSM. According to Telstra, this runs on their 3GSM technology as opposed to the old 2G or 2.5G, which is back on GSM. Confused yet? No, yes. Everyone's nodding and shaking. At the very bottom of that graph, there is CDMA. Now, that's what they're turning off in the bush, allegedly, on January the 28th next year. Although there's a bit of a ruckus today, which we'll talk about very shortly.
The government lets them.
Yeah.
They have to satisfy some tests.
Now, we've put that into perspective now. We've talked about GSM and CDMA. CDMA going. GSM 2.5G, well, its days are numbered, but there's no closure date for it yet, and everyone's moving to 3G, obviously. The handsets will die out. You'll only find 3G handsets on the market very shortly because that's where the telcos want you to go. Everyone needs to move to this new third generation technology.
No point selling handsets for a network that they're going to close.
Exactly. Close. Well, yeah. Which will close before 3G will, obviously. Now, the iPhone is a device which runs on the second generation technology. Now, someone asked me the other day, can I bring an iPhone into this country, plug it in, turn it on, and will it work? The answer to that is yes and no. Now, that everyone's going, no, well, what sort of an answer is that? Well, yes, it will work on 2G technology, which is currently operating in this country.
It would work on our 2G technology.
If you could activate it, which you can't.
That's the thing. Now, there's the no answer, because all the handsets in the United States are currently locked to AT&T, which is the American carrier. Now, you bring a handset over here, yeah, the technology will support it, but the phone won't. It'll just say, no, I'm not handshaking with that network. I'm not authorized to do that, so go away and don't bother me.
Yeah, it's actually programmed not to connect to other networks, yeah.
Now, I've also done a bit of research. I was wilfing, and I've looked for cracks and hacks and things like that to see if people have managed to get on there.
Yep.
There is one guy that I found that says, oh, yeah, do this, do that. Now, it's not for your weak-hearted or faint-hearted, you know. You need to be a real hardcore tech boffin to make this crack work. And even still, that crack that was put onto the network has since disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was SIM related and this, and that, and the other thing, and all that sort of stuff. So,
and if I remember correctly, even if you do it, all it does is activate the phone, the other features, and not get the phone working.
Is that so?
That's the one I read.
Well, that'd be right, because a lot of the other smarts behind the iPhone is related to what the network can give the phone. Like, you know, we connect to 3G, we get broadband, we get videos, we get this, we get that, we get SMS. That's all network-supported features. The 2G network, from my understanding here, is just not, doesn't quite cut it. Like, the fastest that the iPhone works on 2G is on the Edge technology, which is around about 100 to 130 kilobits per second. You're not going to get much faster out of that. Now, why would you do that when you can go and get an HSDPA handset and get 1.5 megabits per second to your handset, which is what, you know, what we're being sold in this country right now. So for those of you who want the iPhone, allegedly they're going to release an Australian version in next year, 2008, which will be a carrier which is yet to be announced. We don't know who it is, whether it be Telstra, Optus, Vodafone, or whoever.
Well, Vodafone were talking in the press the other day about complaining that the iPhone didn't support 3G. So it's interesting that they were making the noise. So maybe they're trying to initiate a discussion.
So hopefully that's as clear as mud. Any questions? Feedback, techtalkradio.com.au. If you want to ask us a question, whether we can answer or not, it's another thing. But
we will always do
it. We've done
best.
The research, and that's what we've come up to. Yes. That is iPhone as of August 2007. Now let's talk about our mate, The Bull Terrier,
Which
Phil
one?
Burgess?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Just to give you a bit of a rundown, Telstra has commenced proceedings in the federal court against Communications Minister Helen Coonan over the government's decision to increase the initial $600 million of funding for the Broadband Connect Infrastructure Fund to almost $1 billion and basically give it to Optus. Now, what happened is Telstra is alleging that the process by which the funding was increased and subsequently awarded to Opel was not fair and equitable, really.
And Telstra's contention is all over the definition of a word, from what I understand. Their original proposal was that the funding could be used to better help underserved parts of the bush.
Yeah.
And they put in a proposal and it was knocked on the head, and then the Opel consortium came up with their proposal, and yes, totally different definition of the word underserved, I think. And the government said, yeah, we'll give it to them. And Telstra jumping up and down, hopping mad, so much so that, as Andrew said, they've launched legal action
against the minister personally,
by the minister and her office. Yes. Mm.
The ALP got involved. They said this accusation, basically what Telstra is saying against the federal government, has already been levelled at the government by the ALP. So they're getting into it as well. Now, let's have a listen. This is what Jeff Booth, who is one of the Telstra directors, had to say about this whole sort of shenanigans.
Well, we've launched this action as a last resort, and the proceedings that we've commenced are really just to get access to information. We want to know what was the process involved in increasing the dollars around the Broadband Communications Infrastructure Fund. We want to know when the aims of the program changed and, what occurred to take this $1 billion from serving people without communications to duplicating existing networks. We did write to the minister's office, and we haven't had any satisfactory response. This is not something we do lightly.
No, I wouldn't be suing the minister for communications just because I could. I think that'd be sort of detrimental to my cause. But nonetheless, Lindsay Tanner, who's the opposition spokesperson here for the Australian Labor Party, he had this to say.
John Howard's last-minute broadband plan is falling apart before it's delivered even a single download. The government changed the goalposts in the tender process because it pulled together at the last minute this second-rate broadband proposition in order to counter Labor's initiative. It was all about looking like they're doing something under the pressure of the forthcoming election, and it's now unravelling at a rapid speed.
No. The forthcoming election. Dr. Ron, do you think it's got anything to do with it?
No, it can't have.
No, absolutely not. So anyway, this is what Senator Coonan then had to say in relation to all this.
This is all about building infrastructure, and you cannot build infrastructure on a reflex action between Labor's announcement and the conclusion of the Broadband Connect process. It's been in train for months, as Labor well knows. That is a complete and utter furphy.
Well, election time, here we come. But that's really the goings-on in downtown Canberra at the moment. But hey, it became a little bit thicker and a little bit faster today as well.
Yes.
Because basically Senator Coonan responded to the legal action brought about by Telstra.
I have now decided that it is appropriate and timely in all the circumstances to have a licence condition put in place. It won't either delay the switch off or impose any additional burden on Telstra if they make good their public commitment.
So is this a bit of tit for tat is what I'm asking now, that Senator Coonan has put a licence in position to stop Telstra turning off CDMA? Am I reading too much into this because of the fact that they're
not
sued by Telstra?
Yeah, it's monkeys in the cage.
Am I being cynical
she
here?
She got something thrown at her and she's thrown something back.
Now, once again, the consumer, I think, is, we discussed this last week, there's blue ticks on mobile handsets now and everyone's having a go at the technology, saying, oh no, the base stations just don't quite cut the mustard for CDMA equivalent or replacement. Now, in a lot of respects, I don't think it's the network, being of a technical person's looking at it here. It's not because of the base station technology. It's because of the handsets. The handsets have always been detrimental. And this is why I think Telstra are trying to put this blue tick on handsets, so that when the people in rural communities are going out there and buying handsets for the new Next G network,
they should pick one that's an appropriate match to the handsets that they used to have. But that's hard to find these days.
Well, hopefully not with this blue tick. This is the whole idea behind what they're doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't think it's the network. I think the base stations there. Mark has been a testament to it as well when he's been in the studio.
That's right. Yes.
That they're doing they're matching them one for one, and the calls are dropping out the same place. But if they're dropping out differently on, you can't the unknown quantity. You can't have a controlled environment here. The unknown quantity has got to be the handset by the user. And there's been a lot of complaints. The minister herself said today that there's been a lot of complaints about how the new Next G network doesn't quite work as well as CDMA. But my personal opinion, I think it's handset related.
I haven't used Next G personally. Graham has, though. You're a big fan.
I like the idea of the network. It's clearly still got its problems and still getting unexplained sudden call dropouts and all that sort of stuff. But I know that the technical people are working on that. And the handset issue with range in the bush makes a lot of sense.
The tit for tat continues. Jeremy Mitchell, who's also one of the managing directors there for Telstra, came out today and he said this.
Telstra gave a commitment to our customers that the Next G coverage would be the same or better than the old CDMA network. Canberra can impose a licence condition, but it makes no difference to us because our priority is to ensure that we deliver on our promise to customers.
Telstra are sounding very confident on that point, aren't they?
Well, why shouldn't they be? That the actual technology that they're rolling out is sound.
That's the strength of those statements, that there's a lot of confidence there in the network. So, I'd read that as very encouraging.
Telstra also, well, actually, Seoul came out. There's been a bit of brouhaha with Mikaki, who's the one of the main board bosses, and Seoul, who runs the company, about fibre to the node. There's been this sort of bluff, I think, is probably a good way of putting it. And Mr. Mikaki came out and said, oh, yeah, this is the way we're doing things these days. But nonetheless, I think that's enough of Telstra for the day. I think we'll continue on.
We've explained that one completely.
Now, let's talk about Elton John. You remember him?
from one form of silliness to another.
Oh, yeah, look, I think,
Elton John, a somewhat flamboyant singer and...
This man. This is Elton?
That's him.
Yeah. Well, basically, he doesn't like the internet. He thinks it stifles everybody's creativity and all that sort of stuff.
He doesn't like it.
And he wants it shut down.
I don't like it.
No, that's right. Rocket Man Elton John is wading into waters he doesn't admit to knowing much about. The London tabloid, so you can read that with what you like, said that Sir Elton suggests that the internet is destroying music. The internet has stopped people from going out and being... with each other and being creative, wrote Sir Elton. He goes on to say that he wanted the internet shut down for 5 years to see how the production of music is
shut
affected.
Down.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Shut down?
I think we should shut the internet down for at least 5 years.
Good luck.
And I'll find something else to do. That'd be really good.
Dear.
Graham, my internet's broken. You say, no, well, it's not broken. It's
Elton John shut it down.
Hey, but hey, if you think about this...
Well, let's ban the telephone as well. Let's shut down the telephone networks and make people go out and talk to each other in the street.
If Elton John has his way, it's certainly going to fix Telstra's problems, don't you think?
It will. What are we going to do with all that funding? We'll have to put it into stamp collecting.
Well, yes. And then everything else like iTunes will go down the gurgler. But speaking of iTunes, AC/DC, believe it or not, have spurred on iTunes big time at the moment. One of Australia's most popular rock and roll exports is finally selling into the music digitally, but not on iTunes.
Oh.
Yes. They've sort of... Because iTunes this week has done some amazing things. They cracked 3 billion songs on it. So they've had a bouquet...
And they got sued by Eminem.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Oh, okay. I heard that about that.
iTunes got sued by Eminem
Aren't they chocolates?
No.
Am I showing my age?
The rapper.
Yeah. Oh, Eminem. Okay.
Yeah, Slim Shady.
Him.
That dude. Okay. Him or his people sued them for apparently not...
They put his music
put his music on without... authorization or without paying him or some sort of nonsense.
Oh, did they breach copyright? Heaven forbid.
How could that happen? Anyway, sorry, your story.
Well, okay, no, AC/DC have sort of said no to iTunes as well. AC/DC, Verizon Wireless has snagged the exclusive rights to sell the band's entire back catalogue through March 2008. So there you go, no AC/DC for iTunes.
So but where do we go to buy them?
Well, Verizon Wireless, well, they must have a website up there because they're becoming a dime a dozen, these. Like even here in Australia, there's, the Sanity's, HMV's, even Harvey Norman, I think, is now getting in. JB have been
Not to mention Big Pond Music and all of those.
Don't mention Big Pond Music because Mark's had all sorts of problems downloading music off Big Pond Music. So.
It makes so much sense from a distribution model point of view. It's just... There's no overheads. You just have a server somewhere.
No, yep. just sounds watery. And to use your expletive the other day, it doesn't sound very good, does it?
Yeah, don't have to worry about quality or anything like
that.
No, just shove out any old the same stuff that Coonan and Telstra were flying around before.
Yeah.
Okay, so iTunes cracked 3 billion songs. The milestone came just 6 months after iTunes, Apple's online music download service, surpassed the 2 billion tracks. So they're going forward at an exponential rate. They'll be up to 10 billion by Christmas.
Wow.
I didn't think music was...
That
was me. Yeah,
no, that was you. Sorry. Three billion tracks.
3 billion songs.
So, has there really been 3 billion songs written in the history of man?
Don't forget, 2.5 billion of them are cover versions.
They would be, wouldn't they? they would have to be including podcasts and just all audio recordings and things.
In the first quarter of this year, it ranked the third biggest overall music retailer in the US, behind number one Walmart stores and Best Buy, according to a survey group in the US. There you go.
3 billion songs.
There you go. Yeah, but it didn't do their share price any good. Their share price plummeted the other day. But I don't think it's on the iTunes back. I think it's on the fact that the iPhone is not what it's cracked up to be, or it's not meeting market expectations or something. Mm. But back to the digital side of things, digital takes the lead in the format race. Did you know now that the global entertainment and media sector saw for the first time last year more revenue growth by digital formats than any other competing physical format?
Good.
There you go. So finally, MP3s downloaded off your internet, which Elton wants to shut down, has now surpassed the buying a CD in the local shop.
That's good.
You're all speechless, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think that's good. And also probably other formats as well. Is it talking about just music or video as well?
It's talking predominantly about CDs and audio CDs and things like that.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
So,
and hopefully audio cassette tapes and things as well.
Audio CDs digital, or should I not mention that at this point?
No, I wouldn't mention that.
Okay.
No, they mean digital online, I think, as opposed to real life.
Dr. Ron, do you want to recap what you were talking about in the news before tonight about the PlayStation 3 and digital tuners before we listen to Adam tonight from the couch?
There was a gentleman from Sony Computer Entertainment in New Zealand who let slip or hinted at the possibility that they may be making a digital TV tuner plug-in for the PS3 in the not-too-distant future, which is the DVB-T standard.
So this would turn your PlayStation, in as well as being all the other things that it already
is. As being a games console and a Blu-ray high-def disc player.
And a media center to play your video files on.
Yes.
It's now going to be your personal digital video recorder as well.
A digital television receiver as well.
I've got a feeling Adam's going to have something to say about this.
Oh, he will. He will, trust me. Yes, just some feedback from the website. AT&T ordered the phones to their spec from Apple, so we should not any issues with AT&T. Oh, yeah, good. Okay, sorry, that's just someone there from Randall. Hello, Randall.
Hi, Randall.
Randall.Irvin. Hello.
So AT&T have ordered the iPhone.
It's a real worry. His email address is @mac.com. Is that something to be worried about? I kid you not.
No bias
let's,
there.
Let's go and have a bit of a listen on the couch, shall we? Here's Adam Turner for this evening.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Apparently being a games console, media center and Blu-ray player still isn't enough for the PlayStation 3. Now it wants to be your personal video recorder as well. Around March next year, Sony expects to introduce a digital TV tuner add-on, turning the PlayStation 3 into a personal video recorder, Sony revealed last week. The PS3 wants to be all things to all men, but is Sony getting too greedy in its attempts to own your lounge room? Personal video recorders are mission-critical devices, and as media center PC owners will tell you, they behave best when left undisturbed. Is it really practical to use the one device for gaming, watching movies, and recording television? If you're single, you probably think the answer is yes, but if you share a lounge room with your family, you know the answer's no. You want to record your favourite show, your better half wants to watch a movie, and the kids want to play games. Who's going to win? I can tell you right now, won't be you. A PlayStation 3 PVR might be a nice novelty, but it's not very practical, unless Sony expects people to buy a second PS3. We all know games console hardware is sold at a loss, with the money made back on games and services. So why would Sony put a digital TV tuner in the PlayStation 3? If you're watching or recording television, then you're not playing games, listening to CDs, or watching a movie on Blu-ray or plain old DVD. Sony has a finger in all of these pies, but if you're just watching the Idiot Box, then you're not putting extra dollars into Sony's coffers. Or are you? It doesn't take much imagination to think about the possibilities a TV-enabled PS3 opens up for Sony. Monitoring your viewing habits, monitoring your ad-watching habits, monitoring your ad-skipping habits. A It's all precious data to both Sony and interested third parties. The promise of a Sony movie download service is designed to get more PS3 owners connected to the internet, which obviously gives Sony access to the supercomputer they've snuck into your lounge room in the guise of a games console. Microsoft has already painted the idea of a TiVo for advertisements, which would insert fresh advertisements into old recordings on personal video recorders to ensure you see today's ads even if you're watching a recording from last week. You can be sure Sony has similar ideas, and the PlayStation 3 is the perfect delivery platform. Sony has obviously learned by now that if you don't give people what they want, they'll just hack your devices and do it anyway. Apple, on the other hand, relies on this, realizing that if they release limited products that are easily hackable, like the Apple TV, people can add as whatever features they want, but then Apple doesn't have to support those features because they're not officially there. Sony knows if it doesn't add a digital TV tuner to the PS3, then someone else will. By adding a digital TV tuner itself, Sony assures it remains in full control over you and your console. Games consoles are all about controlling and owning your lounge room, and Sony isn't selling the PlayStation 3 just for your viewing pleasure.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft is going to clarify its open source plans. Remember, we had them on the show recently and talked about Open Office XML, OOXML, and all that sort of stuff.
Office Open XML.
It's an interesting web of which they weave. But Microsoft clarified its plans to seek open source certification for its shared source licenses last Wednesday, saying it will submit for approval only the two licenses that allow source code to be used on any platform. So they must have a few others up their sleeve, but that's the whole idea between open source, isn't it? Anyone can see it, anyone can use it, and it's free.
That's the idea.
Last time I looked, anyway.
There is a format that's been widely used for some time, and Microsoft have decided to invent their own open format as well.
Yeah.
But interesting, we had Sarah Bond from Microsoft, I think, on the program, didn't we, a few weeks back, talking about the new Office suite?
Yes. We're trying to hear the other side of the story too, from the Open Office, or the other sort of their opposition, I guess. Just trying to wrangle a bit of an interview, a bit mic shy at the moment. But nonetheless, we'll get there down the track very shortly, hopefully. Okay, printer emissions can risk your health. Graham, yes. you had a bit of a delve into this. Now, what's the deal with your average laser printer giving you palpitations?
Well, what happened was that there was a research study being done up at Queensland University of Technology, and they were looking at fine particles in the air. And they set up their equipment in a typical office, and they were expecting to find that at 9 a.m. and on the Monday morning, or just before, that all the diesel particles would start coming in through the air conditioning system from the street, and the fine particle counts would go up. And what they found was that the particle count inside went up a lot faster than it did outside, and they went looking for the reason. And it turns out that some laser printers, when they print, they set out these very fine particles of toner into the air.
Well, it's pretty easy to get on your skin when you delve into the back there.
Yeah, but even when they're just running normally, the these very fine particles of toner can escape from the printer and get into the air. And because they're such tiny particles these days, with like microfine technology to do very high resolution and very high quality printing, these particles get right down into your lungs, a bit like cigarette smoke, and do a little bit of damage.
Now, to talk about laser printing 101, Graham.
Yeah.
How does a laser printer work? You actually have the toner.
Yep.
And it heats it, doesn't it?
Yep.
To cure it to the paper, if you like.
Okay. You generate an image by having a photosensitive drum and writing to it with a laser. That's where the laser comes into.
Right.
Where the light shines on it, it becomes conductive and doesn't pick up any toner. Where the light didn't shine on it, it transfers the toner from the little toner bin to the little drum and then transfers it off the drum onto the paper. And that's done electrostatically. In other words, with static electricity. So
there are very fine particles of toner.
The finer you make the particles of toner, the higher quality the image.
Yes.
And then once these very fine particles are on the paper, there's three different types of particle embedded in the toner. There's stuff that's very black, which is mainly carbon. There's stuff that's magnetic to make it easy to move about and convince it to do what you want it to do. And there's stuff that's plastic that at the back end of the photocopier gets melted onto the paper to stick it all down.
Right.
Were you a photocopier technician in a past life or something?
Yes.
Graham's
repaired. Oh, my goodness. There you go. You learn something every day.
Graham's repaired printers for years.
I've been repairing printers and stuff. Yeah, and a laser printer is just the back end of a photocopier.
Well, this bit of laser printer, according to, and please excuse me, Professor Lydia Morawska from the Queensland University of Technology. She said, potential effects range from respiratory irritation to cardiovascular system and cancer type sort of thing. So you can get
some serious effects.
Yeah. There's another reason to go bubble jet, I guess, really, isn't it?
Well,
and keep ink all over your fingers. They'll find something wrong with the ink that they use in bubble jets one day, shortly.
Or to choose a laser printer that doesn't spray its toner around the place, because there are some...
Are there some that do that?
Well, yeah, in the research, she's come up with a table of the various different printers and how much of these very fine particles they emit, and some are a lot worse than others.
Dr. Ron, you went to the place where it's a mecca for shooting particles in round circles down the road here from where we broadcast in Clayton, Australia, now has its first synchrotron.
The synchrometron.
That's right. I didn't actually go there, but I just did some reading up about it because it was a news item we talked about a few episodes ago, but it caught my interest.
They've been building it for a while. Is it finished now?
It is. It's finished.
In less than half an hour, can you tell us what a synchrotron is, apart from the fact that they shoot atoms at things, don't they?
They do. It's designed to be a microscope, and we'll hear about it in just a few moments, mm-hmm. but it's essentially a very, very, very large microscope, the size of a football field, and it helps people scientists to see things at a molecular level. So it was opened last week, and it featured prominently in the mainstream media.
All right, let's go to the videotape and see what you had to say.
Last week saw the official opening of Australia's first synchrotron in Melbourne's eastern suburb of Clayton. Unveiled by Victoria's new premier, John Brumby, the synchrotron has been likened to a $220 million microscope the size of a football field. Synchrotrons allow scientists to conduct the latest medical and industrial research by producing beams of light 1 million times brighter than the sun and creating X-rays that can be used to look at molecules which are too small to be seen with a conventional microscope. When the synchrotron accelerates electrons to almost the speed of light, the electrons are deflected through magnetic fields, creating extremely bright light, or synchrotron light. The synchrotron light is channeled down beam lines to experimental workstations where it's used for research. There are 43 synchrotrons around the world. Most scientifically developed countries have their own synchrotron, including Japan, Germany, Sweden, Brazil, India, and now Australia. Until now, Australian scientists have been forced to travel offshore to conduct scientific experiments using synchrotrons. In June 2001, after many proposals, feasibility studies and recommendations from Australia's scientific and research communities, the Victorian government announced plans to build a synchrotron right here in Melbourne. Construction began in 2003, and now the dream of many Australian scientists has become a reality. The Australian Synchrotron's science director, Professor Robert Lamb, spoke with the ABC's Kelly Wilson last week.
It caters for pretty much all scientists in Australia, so everyone that you could imagine, anything with an ologist on the end, a geologist, a biologist, or even a chemist.
Now that Australian scientists have the ability to analyse molecules, the machine can be used in all sorts of different applications. The synchrotron will be used to research more powerful computer chips, monitor pollution, make stronger building materials, and even make changes to the way food tastes. Last week, the CSIRO said Australia's new synchrotron could even assist in the fight to save the Tasmanian devil from the outbreak of facial tumour disease, currently decimating devil populations. CSIRO's Dr. Jeff Church.
Try to detect small changes in the structure of the hair that would indicate the onset of the disease.
Now, if you think a synchrotron beamline is just what you need to complete your PhD or further your industrial or scientific research project, simply put your case to the National Scientific Advisory Committee. You can do this online. Visit www.synchrotron.vic.gov.au. This is Dr. Ron, reporting for Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the last bit of the show this evening. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb, at the panel. We'll be brief here because this is what happens this time of night. We run out of time. Just briefly, there's another email in from Randall. Randall's obviously worked out how to use the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, which is sensational. You can too. It's quite easy. Just visit the website. He writes, if Dell, HP or any big supplier was to offer Linux, Red Hat or similar as the installed system, then he'd be there. Now Graham, you reckon they do?
I'm pretty sure Dell does, at least. Yeah.
I'm sure Dell does.
I'm not sure which particular brand of Linux they use, but I'm sure they use one of them.
Mm.
Well, there you go. We'll do a bit of research on that. We might talk about that next time.
Okay. Botnets. What's a botnet? Everyone knows. You've got a zombie at home where they... rampant little creatures that sends... You know, I've seen your dog, but... No. It's Elder Structo, your dog. But yes. What happens for poor unsuspecting people from time to time is that their system, their PC, maybe even their Mac these days or something, will have a bit of rogue software put on them by visiting an unscrupulous website or accidentally clicking on a link you shouldn't have. And what happens is it becomes a zombie. It sits there and waits for some big brother to send an email message to it to say, here, send out these 10 billion spams.
A ready, set, go message, or it waits for a time when the system clock is at a certain date and time and it starts sending messages. But wouldn't have a big impact from one machine, but from 100,000 machines, it has a big impact.
Trend Micro have developed some software for hosting companies and things like that so that they can actually, more the point, probably ISPs, a security tool that identifies botnets and blocks attacks from these zombie networks.
Oh, okay. So it looks for lots of machines sending out the same sort of traffic all of a sudden.
I suspect so, and it'll then block them.
That's pretty clever.
The Botnet Identification Service, one of three hosted security applications that are part of Trend Micro's Secure Cloud line, deals with the growing botnet problem with real-time identification of command and control centers that operate zombie networks. The product is targeted at ISPs and educational institutions. There you go.
Yeah, good idea.
It's not bad. And let me tell you, the spam at the moment is something shocking. If I get one more medical thing that comes in, and what is it with people that are just like sending PDFs now? Have you got any of those? You probably don't, Dr. Ron, because you're
Yes, I do. I've had a dozen in the last week.
A blank email with a PDF in it. I've never opened one. I don't even know what they are.
PDF is an ad. Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is? They're just an ad. Yeah, good. Because they're maybe...
Your spam assassin should kill them on the head.
Spam assassin? Yeah, no, I don't actually have spam assassin. Oh. I use other unscrupulous things that people swear and curse about and all sorts of things like that. Saying, why can't I get an email through to you? What do you use? Do you use Spam Assassin? Do you? Any good?
Spam Assassin running on the mail server. So that's a server-side spam interceptor.
But not everyone runs a server. We're not like us.
True. Oh, but your ISP should.
Your ISP should
offer it.
Yep.
And also I use Thunderbird as an email client, and that's got excellent junk mail handling.
And so does Outlook 2003 and above has very good junk mail handling as well.
Now, I disagree with that. I'm so over my Outlook's junk handling thing. There's this one at the moment, and I don't want to give them any sort of virtue, but every second email I get is one from these spam things. Now, I said, no, this is junk mail in my Outlook, and it just ignores it completely.
Next time they have a monthly update to your rules in your Outlook 2003 that comes out with the Windows updates.
Yeah.
And you might find that if there's been one that's been pretty bad for a few weeks, that it might come out as in the next update that it catches it.
Okay.
The other thing you can do in Outlook is you can go and set the filtering to high instead of low.
Oh, yeah? All right, I'll do that.
Don't tell them to ramp it up higher than it is now.
what happens?
We'll never be able to get a message.
I'm going to be using the feedback form myself to get messages through to you.
Oh, I see. You're having a go at my yes.
Maybe a subtle one.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people out there saying, I can't get through.
No, just SMS you.
So that's the joys of public life, isn't it, guys?
Spam is a continuing problem. Everyone's getting more of it at the moment.
And this is why I think...
We've got to have a break. We'll be back shortly, okay?
Bye.
Okay, after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a... Oh!
Can't believe you pushed that music up on me while I was speaking. Damn it, how rude.
Yeah, well, you will prattle on for 2 hours as you keep telling us. Come on, get on with the show.
Western Digital's Elements 320 gigabyte external hard drive. That's this week's gadget.
Why?
Well, I've bought one.
Oh,
I figured that's a good reason, I suppose.
This, fair enough.
Yes, in this day and age of video editing, I'm always scraping for disk space. I get down to under a gigabyte, and then I get all these horrible errors from a Windows machine. It says you're running out of disk space, and I've got to go and clean up stuff. And I was thinking about buying a new disk. I thought I'll just get a new external one, a USB one. This is a great little device from Western Digital. It's got a 320 gig capacity, USB 2, so it plugs straight in, plugs into a PowerPoint, and that's all there is to it, really. Very, very simple. Requires Windows 2000 or XP or Vista or Mac OS 10 version 10.2 or higher. Comes with a 12-month warranty. Its RRP is $280. I bought one on eBay, and it cost me $130, so that was pretty good.
Can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong. Cheap disk space. What I love is the fact that it's easy to set up. Instant 320 gigabyte expansion. What I dislike is that it's USB, so it has slow startup after a period of inactivity. You have to wait.
Does it come in FireWire?
Not this model, no.
But you can get one in FireWire.
I think you can get FireWire models, Andrew. Yeah,
the other FireWire's good. Fast.
The other strange thing was it was shipped with a power supply, but the power supply didn't have a power cable. So that was the only other option.
How does that work?
I don't know.
How long did it last before you filled it up?
It's about a third full at the moment. Yeah,
I've got lots of DVDs for you. Full of music for this show. All right.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And the Tech Talk Radio website of the week this week is a new addition to the Bureau of Meteorology. There's a mouthful, isn't it? The bomb site, Bureau of Meteorology. They have BlueLink, which was launched last week as a joint effort between the CSIRO, I believe, and the Australian Government's Bureau of Meteorological. The BlueLink forecasts provide information on coastal and ocean currents and eddies, surface and subsurface ocean properties that impacts linked to maritime and commercial operations, defense applications, safety at sea, ecological sustainability, region and global climate. So if you're interested, if you're a boatie, if you want to see where the currents are in the world, three-dimensionality-wise.
A fisher person or...
Oh, ideal for fishing.
Yeah.
So you can see where all the currents are and the temperatures are and what sort of fish like what sort of temperatures. Like us landlubbers, I guess, for whatever you want to... We've got our own side. It's the BOM... You know, radar site. You see the rain coming across.
The weather
radar. This is the one for those people.
The underwater weather.
Who, yes, yes, the non-land weather type sort of stuff. So you can go and see how it all works. So that's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, which can be found on wsbom.gov.au/BlueLink.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A video of Filipino prisoners dancing to hits such as Michael Jackson's Thriller has become an instant worldwide hit. The video shot on a, in a provincial jail on the central Philippines island of Cebu, I think that's Cebu, has attracted more than 1.9 million views on YouTube.
See, there's hope for us yet, Dr. Ron. Don't you reckon we could get up there and do a little bit of jig or a dance or something?
People will watch anything.
People will watch anything. That's right. It's amazing what'll just capture the interest. I mean, it's just fascinating, the things that are out there.
So, hang on, a bunch of prisoners in a jail did a jig to Michael Jackson's thing. Yep. They whack it up on YouTube, 1.9 visitors.
1.9 million.
They could try out for Australian Idol.
Well, there's a thought, isn't it?
Philippines Idol.
Maybe you could do Australian Idol on the internet and we won't have to watch it on free-to-air television. What about that?
That'd be really, really good.
There's
a
concept.
You've got my vote, Gunga Din. Yes.
All right. We'd like your vote too. So you can send us email like a lot of people have been doing tonight from all over the world. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au or visit the website if you're having problems with our spam filter, because it's only going to get worse as another email there. What
you
is spam?
You can ring us up and leave us a message.
You can do that.
On 1-300-664-882.
Don't forget, you get a full 2 hours of us if you want to listen to us on the podcast, because we do. We podcast. Visit the website and feel free to subscribe or subscribe through iTunes and things like that as well.
It's hard to believe that we prattle on for 2 hours, but we do.
Yeah.
Easily.
It's bizarre, really, and we don't get paid for it either. It's dedication and, yes, anyway. I think that's about it for this week. Until the same time next week, we'll be on a new radio station very shortly too. If you live in central Victoria, 100.7 Highlands FM, we're going to be taking the show in the not too distant. So there's,
very cool.
There's another one to add to the list.
Excellent.
Until then, it's bye for now. See you next week, boys.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.